Blog Talk Radio.
Where's everybody at? Is that you in the studio there, Craig?
Yeah.
There we go. I'm not sure who Chris is. Well, I guess we'll get rolling. I guess I'm sure he's going to join us here in a second. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Race Chat Live with Greg and Chris. Looking forward to another great show. God, after this last weekend, dying to hear your guys' thoughts on everything, Craig. Anything that you need to announce, want to announce, throw out there before we get Chris in here and you guys get rolling?
Yeah, I'm just madder than a southerner out of grits and cornbread. maybe mad's not the right word. Maybe confused is, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I honestly don't know how anybody can eat grits, but that's besides the point.
While we're waiting for him, let me go ahead and throw out a couple things. One, make sure you guys check out the 110 Nation on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Follow us on Twitter at 110 Nation. Check out the site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. If you guys have not been over there, our intern, Mike, he has been writing some really great pieces, and you guys need to make sure you guys check that out. Those that are also other sports fans, the NBA draft going on tonight. So you guys make sure you guys tune in Tuesday night as we'll be covering out of the 110 Nation Sports Show. Got to thank Fit for Life and Carolina Sports Plus. Without these guys, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So got to thank them as well. Anything else? Do we know why Chris has not gotten in with us yet?
Well, he might be. He might be still shopping.
What's he buying us?
I don't know. Maybe tickets to Daytona in January.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're about to find out. I got him in the studio. Chris, how you doing tonight?
Howdy, 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 y'all. Y'all doing all right today?
No, I'm still confused and upset and madder than the southerner without grits and cornbread.
I mean, you had to actually open the show up here tonight. So how did that go?
Well, it went over like a fart in church. But honestly, if you look at the way that I reworded the show, it says Race Chat Live with Craig and Chris. Do you know why?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you want me to shut up tonight. I gave you the first 4 minutes on the intro. My
so
turn
anyway,
to talk
well,
then I know
it's not your turn to talk
yet. Craig.
He ended up.
I think you're doing a hell of a job. You just keep on what you're doing, Craig. You keep the show rolling, man. I'll be here.
All right. Well, when I want you, I'll tell you to get on the line. All right, Race Chat Live fans, welcome to another glorious edition of Race Chat Live. Now, we didn't have a whole lot of action. There was no action in the Monster Energy Cup Series this past weekend, but there sure was a hell of a lot of action in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. Let's start off with I had an attitude problem, and I was never really good in Cup, Mr. Johnny Sauter. I'm waiting for Chris to chime in and say something intelligent, but he won't. He'll be quiet.
God bless America, Johnny Sauter. NASCAR needs to free Johnny Sauter.
Well, I don't know if I agree with the suspension. What I don't agree with, and Chris, maybe you can help me out with this when I give you a second to chit-chat. Explain to me why in the rule book it says a driver must attempt to qualify for every race to be eligible for the playoffs. Oh, except Johnny Sauter, because we're going to give him a waiver. Now, how is that okay? I could see, and some might point out the fact that Kyle Busch got a waiver back in 2015, when he wrecked at Daytona in the Xfinity race, and he was out 3 months. And then he come back to go on a tear, and I know Jason is excited as an Ethiopian with a barrel full of McDonald's. But explain to me why I'm full of it, man. I got one-liners all night long. Thank you very much. I'm here each and every Thursday at 8 o'clock. Explain to me, because I'm not a real smart northerner. I'm the first to admit it. And that's when she helps keep me straight. Explain to me why they gave Johnny Sauter that exemption, that waiver. Please, somebody tell me why.
Well, you know, I think it comes down to NASCAR probably did not think this completely through. I suggested to you earlier this week that not so much of a suspension seemed the right way, that NASCAR really wanted to nip this in the bud, that since he had qualified for the playoffs already, that it would be better to deduct points from his champion from round one of the championship than it would be to actually just sit him down for a race. But there again, Craig, it's consistent with other things that have happened, though we have seen guys use their front bumper to the rear bumper of competitors on pit road. This falls in consistency with how they've managed it while they were out on the racetrack under caution. Two other examples that we've been able to use is Kyle Busch with Ron Hornaday in 2011 and also in 2016 with Matt Kenseth and Joey Logano. Matt Kenseth wrecking Joey Logano under caution at Martinsville cost him a race. But, you know, I think that NASCAR was a little bit too severe on the penalty towards this. At the same time, it would be very odd to see NASCAR make a certain ruling with one driver because he is in the playoffs versus what they would normally do for a driver who may not necessarily be in the playoffs. So, you know, they stayed with consistency. And, you know, the waiver, I'm not too upset about it, guys. It's gonna hurt Johnny Sauter. It's going to hurt him in the long run that he missed a race. But, you know, we've seen this waiver signed quite a few times, including Tony Stewart, Kyle Busch, and maybe a couple of others that have been given waivers. How can we be so upset about this when, for the first time ever in league history, that we had somebody that disqualified themselves from points and actually went down to another series, a lower series, to run points in that series? I think that that's a little bit more confusing than the whole NASCAR suspending Johnny Sauter. Of course, I'm talking about Ross Chastain, who a few weeks ago announced that he was no longer contending for points in Xfinity Series, but would try to work his way into the playoff squad for the Truck Series by winning and getting into the top 20. So two times this year, there's been kind of a difference in how they're allowing the drivers to do certain things. Being that NASCAR has not had to suspend a driver in this playoff format or leading up to the playoff format, this was new territory. I'm not sure if NASCAR got it right. I don't have an explanation, but I do believe that NASCAR didn't get it right. Mr. CJ Sports, what's your idea?
Kyle Busch does it, and Kyle Busch is viewed as the worst driver in the face of the earth and hated by everybody. And so I'm kind of confused on Johnny Sauter does the same thing, and it just kind of, well. But I'm kind of in between both you on this. Like, I understand where Craig is coming from, and I agree. Like, not only you're suspended for a race, and so therefore the rule says you must attempt to qualify or whatever. Basically, you need to be at every race, and you did this to yourself to be ineligible for race. It's not like, okay, Kyle Busch gets in a wreck and is hurt and gets a waiver, or you did this to yourself. You self-inflicted this whole situation. So I have less sympathy and feel that you kind of did this to yourself. Why should you get a waiver?
Why are we killing the entertainment factor in racing, Mr. CJ Sports? We're all entertained by what happened. There's no doubt about that. And we're going to see this on promos for the next 10 years as they lead up to a race in the Truck Series. So, I mean, in the end, the fans didn't seem to be as upset about this. As you said, when Kyle Busch did it to Ron Hornaday, it was like the end of the world. Oh, somebody better do something. But the pendulum swung on this one. It seemed like more people were behind Johnny Sauter. Please continue.
Yeah, but my issue with it is I don't mind the boys be boys theory, but when you're in caution, and this is a very dangerous sport, and this is where I kind of have the issue and where I don't think he should be eligible. I don't mind you getting out of the car and you guys beating the crap out of each other. There's certain things I don't mind, but when you're under caution and now you're using a vehicle the way, and everybody had the issue with Kyle Busch, and I'm a Kyle Busch fan, and I have no problem with Kyle Busch being suspended. That was, you went above and beyond, and you caused the possibility of it being something that could cause injury and other things. Like, you self-inflicted yourself. That was a little too much in my book. Like, you can't, I don't know, I don't like what he did. And you're under caution, there's a reason. And I don't know, I have an issue with it. I'm, like I said, I'm more in Craig's corner on this because you self-inflicted it and you could have caused, this could have got ugly. And, you know, you got to have some kind of head on your shoulder and not let the emotions get to you to a certain point. I feel that it went too far.
Okay. All right. Well, then I want to remind you guys, you know, the Michael Walker incident with Lake Speed. Michael Walker opened his car, ran up pit road, and stuck his hands in another race car to, I guess, slap or hit Lake Speed. How many times at Martinsville have we seen at the end of the race, especially in the Truck Series, these guys run all over each other as they're trying to get into the pit at the conclusion of the race? Still no fines, nothing boys have at it. What made this so much different that's got guys like you appalled at the fact that NASCAR didn't do more? And we're talking about ruining a guy's season all because of retaliation when guys, I'm on the side of Johnny Sauter just because Austin Hill wrecked him the week before. Austin Hill wrecked him again this week. And as an old school racer, you're not gonna be given the chrome horn that many times and not retaliate doing something. So where are we divided at, guys? Would we have rather seen a fist fight? Would we have rather seen him wreck Austin Hill under green? I mean, you know, we've had two really good fist fights in the last few years. I believe the fist fight with Don Hunter Nemechek
that was
Kirker a few years ago. That was a good one, right?
But there's safety things going on during caution. There's a reason they're caught. That's where I have my issue is what happens if somebody part of the safety of NASCAR was out there trying to clean up or. So, you know, somebody was not aware of what was going on because it's under caution. They're trying to communicate with their crew. Other things are going on. Like, to me, that's there's one thing when we watch Cole Custer and the Nemechek thing and he go chase him. You know, that's two guys out there. That's different to me than you using
riding
your truck.
On a racetrack at the end of the race. How can that be less dangerous than what Johnny Sauter did, completely, you know, confined to his race car? Austin Hill, he's got plenty of protection around him. He roughed up the back bumper. That's about it, guys. This is being taken way out of proportion.
All right, somebody needs to take their phone off a speaker. Because there's a heck
I'm on
of
the headset,
so. Oh, okay, that might
I'm
be
I'm
going
to mute myself.
Too.
I'm on the headset, but I'm going to mute myself, so it's probably me.
All right. Here's what I'm getting at. He made a statement over the in-car radio that said NASCAR is not going to like that. That right there, I think, got him the suspension. NASCAR is not going to like this. Well, you know what? You're already being watched because your nickname is Hothead for a reason. Don't do anything that's going to get NASCAR. You guys have already had a couple of dust-ups. And you
his
go
nickname
at, you
is God
go
Bless
at
America,
half throttle.
Johnny Sauter, thank you.
What's that?
His nickname is God Bless America, Johnny Sauter, thank you.
I thought it was Hothead. Oh, wait, that might be KB. You go around the track half to three-quarters throttle, weaving in and out of cars to take out somebody that took you out for a better turn. Now, we can all say Austin Hill doesn't know how to do the bump and run, and we had that discussion the other night. You, myself, and Mr. Shannon Bolin, who we'd love to have on the show one night if he could ever free himself. But maybe he didn't do the bump and run right. Maybe that was enough to get him loose. But I thought that was the whole point of the bump and run, was to get him loose, get him out of the groove so you can go out underneath him. If Johnny thought that was running a little too high, maybe he should come run. Maybe he should come back to go back to dirt racing or maybe go to a go-kart.
Wait a minute. He executed a perfect bump and run on Austin Hill. Austin Hill fudged the bump and run. I don't believe Austin Hill put a bump and run on Johnny Sauter. I think that Austin Hill deliberately put Johnny Sauter in the wall. And we're so caught up in how Johnny Sauter reacted that we're forgetting that when you push somebody to a certain limit, the expectations of what they can do is unlimited. In this situation, Johnny Sauter was provoked and he retaliated. That in itself is not something different than any other racer would do. As fans, we don't know the pressure that he was underneath. You know, Johnny Sauter's had a heck of a year, guys. He's a seasoned racer. He's obviously not making very many friends. He's made several outlandish statements saying that he was not going to pay for rides, that in the day that he had to pay for a ride to race in trucks, he would go back late model racing in Wisconsin. That seems to be what he's doing this weekend. So
he
may have gotten what he wished for.
Well, that's just it. And I applaud him for not saying he's not going to pay to race. I applaud him. We had that discussion multiple times last season, did we not, about drivers paying to play.
Yeah, and Austin Hill's a perfect example of daddy's money.
But that's pretty much what NASCAR is now, is daddy's money. Paul, let me point to some examples. Paul Menard.
Chase Elliott.
Chase Elliott. Let's see, who else? There's one more, and I can't think of his. I could see his face, but I can't think of his name. But anyway, you get the point. That is NASCAR today. It's a pay and play. Austin Dillon.
Mm.
Austin Dillon, he's running on Grandpa's money. Or, I'm sorry, Papaw's money, or whatever he calls him.
Pat-Pat.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a grown-ass man, dude. Call him Grandpa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I called my grandpa Poppy up till the day he passed. So,
right.
I get that's the way of the sport now, and I applaud Johnny Sauter for not conforming to that. But you know what? Don't hate the player, hate the game. I don't remember who said that, but I love that quote. And pretty much that's what he's doing. He loves the game that he's in. He just doesn't like the people he plays with.
Well, most people have said that Johnny Sauter's time is up, that he is taking, quote, a ride from the younger generation. But all this is on the footsteps of hearing just yesterday that Junior and Junior Motorsports will be fielding a Junior Motorsports truck in the Gander Mountain Truck Series, and guess who's going to be piloting that truck for five races?
Dale Jr.
And so, once again, we contradict exactly what we're saying. And we were all up in the air over Greg Biffle winning. You know,
no, I thought it was great.
Comes a point in time where we have to realize as fans that we are contradicting every damn issue. One of us has an opinion. The other is going to have the opposite opinion. But in the end, guys, isn't it about just making the news? Isn't it about, without that ruckus last week, we would have not had much to talk about Iowa. But
no.
Here we are. We're opening a show, and who are we talking about? We're talking about the news of the week, our very first subject, and it's about Johnny Sauter and Austin Hill. Guys, we can't go on and continue to think that drama doesn't help our sport. It does.
I agree with you 110%. I will not disagree with you because, like you said, what the hell would we talk about tonight? We'd have to preview Sonoma, and we'd have to talk about boogity, boogity, boogity.
Right. Instead, we're talking about our opinions. And, you know, it's obvious in the news today where those who are for the Democratic Party, Joe Biden, said, I'm from a time where we work together even in our indifferences. And that seems to be a core issue in this sport these days, that we don't feel like we can work together and have different opinions of why or what should happen. Look, NASCAR did exactly what NASCAR should have done. They parked Johnny Sauter, but they did not take his chance for a championship away. Now, what's got us all caught up in the air is the fact of some little rule that says you have to have a waiver. Well, guys, isn't that why the waiver was created? So NASCAR could go and not be fit in this tight little box to where they couldn't officiate having something like this happen? It's what it fears on. What I'm most fearful of is NASCAR's actions towards Johnny Sauter means that the next time that there's an on-track incident, it will be taken care of at a place like Atlanta, where Brad Keselowski and Carl Edwards got into it at Talladega, and Carl Edwards took retaliation on Brad Keselowski and sent Keselowski into the fence. I think it was 2011. Sent him into the fence at Atlanta Motor Speedway at top speed of 200 miles an hour. Now, guys, I know that y'all remember seeing that number 12 Dodge-sponsored Challenger upside down. Where was the impact from that wall at? It was impacted on the driver's side. Worst-case scenario. But unfortunately, with the type of ruling that NASCAR has come down with, that's going to be the type of retaliation that we get, and we're going to argue on this show that it would have been safer had he wrecked him under green, and had he wrecked him under green, we wouldn't have started the show off with this particular subject. We may have started the show off with Austin Hill and Johnny Sauter, but we would not have had this conversation. It would have been a completely different conversation, and Johnny Sauter would be able to race this weekend at Gateway in St. Louis, Missouri.
Well, I never said that it was safer to wreck him under green. Never did I say that. He shouldn't have done it, period. But go back to the beginning of the before the race even started. and they got to Iowa. Now, according to Austin Hill, who's got a bad reputation in the garage, let me just point that out. Austin Hill is not innocent in this whole damn thing. He is not a victim. And I don't want to paint him as one because he's not. He's a pompous little ass. But he went up to Sauter and tried to talk to Sauter. He doesn't have his phone number. How the hell do you not have a competitor? Maybe Johnny's too old to have a cell phone. Who knows?
That's a good one. The first joke you cracked all night, right?
No, that was the third or fourth one, if you'd have been paying attention.
I just forgot to laugh.
Yeah, exactly. I said I was madder than a southerner without grits and cornbread.
Well, you still got bacon, so we're okay.
Okay. And Angie Sid Skinner said it the other morning, too. How do they not be able to contact one another? She said, personally, and I agree with this, if I got a beef with somebody, Chris, I don't know how you handle it, but I know how I handle it. I go and handle it one-on-one. I go handle it in person. Nowadays, the way it goes is they text each other with little heart emojis and broken heart emojis. No, that's bullshit. Call the person up. Hey, listen, I messed up. I shouldn't have hit you like that. I apologize. I know that I have a receipt coming. And I know that I'm not going to know when it's going to happen, but know when it happens, I'll know it.
Now, if Austin Hill was really truly apologetic for what happened the week before, do you really believe that this would have escalated into what it is, or was just Austin Hill trying to be a tall big boy, a young punk, stepping up to an old seasoned driver that said, look, I don't even want to look at you right now. I like the guy who says, man, I ain't even studying you, versus the young punk that says, hey, I'm coming to apologize for our incident last week. Well, I think the guy's kind of trying to be a smartass or something. You know, look, after a few weeks pass by, maybe so you come by the hall, you come by the RV. We run into each other in a setting that's outside of the racetrack. We talk. But when you tell me that Austin Hill tried to track down Johnny Sauter to talk to him, well, who's to say Austin Hill wasn't tracking down Johnny Sauter just to blame him, just to go off and you know, hey, Johnny Sauter, a grown-ass man we're talking about, doesn't even want to fool with it, says, I don't have the time of day for you, kid. You know, I mean, really. What can you blame either side? Obviously, Austin Hill wasn't over it. He wouldn't have done the retaliation that he did to Johnny Sauter. It obviously wasn't over. Johnny Sauter took the high road, walked away. Because let me tell you something, if you still got feelings that you want to fight somebody, the last thing that you want to do is what, Craig?
Antagonize them.
Yeah, you don't want to talk to them. If you're still that mad that you want to put your hands around somebody, the best thing for you to do is stay the hell away. That's common sense reality right there. And I would like to know a little bit more about, you know, you say that Austin Hill has this really badass impression in the garage. Is there anything that really backs that up, or are we just kind of reaching out there for that?
No. In the interview going after the race, they were interviewing him, and Mr. Freeze comes up and says, you're making a lot of people angry. So right then and there, they didn't elaborate on it, but right then and there, if Stewie's saying it, it's probably the Bible.
Okay, so Stuart Freeze then come up to Austin Hill and said, hey, you're kind of getting – you're being a thorn in the side to everybody.
Right. And it was loud enough for the camera to – or the microphone on the camera to pick it up. So what does that tell you?
Wow. This is Big J journalism, Craig Moore. Thank you for bringing this subject to notice.
Listen, I got Sirius XM, man. I listen to that stuff in the morning on my way to work. I listen to it on break time, at lunch,
and then I listen to it on the ride home. So if I miss something in an interview, I catch it. They had a really cool interview tonight, and I want to talk about that in a little while once we're done with this. And it was with Red Farmer, and before that it was a good old DW. And Red Farmer still races, by the way. That's cool.
Yes, he does. Not even an hour from where we are.
And he was going out to work on his car as soon as he got done interviewing with the Godfather.
Point, Stuart Friesen, in an interview that was being conducted between maybe Claire B. Lang or somebody in Austin Hill, Stuart Friesen actually walks up to Austin Hill and tells him that you're kind of getting on people's nerves out here.
Right. So what does that tell you?
It means that the kid for the first time has a car or a truck in this, for instance, that's capable of keeping up with the guys, but he just hasn't learned how to race with the veteran yet. And this is coming from a second year, really third year driver in Stuart Friesen. So a Friesen who's not far from a rookie himself in the series, that tells a lot if he's going up to Austin Hill saying, "Hey man, you might need to chill out just a little bit because you're starting to rub people wrong." Now, in a way, I find that to be the very friendly thing to do. But there again, Stuart may have taken advantage of the fact that he's seen him in an interview and knew that there was more to the story and was actually I always thought there was problems between Johnny Sauter and Stuart Friesen last year with GMS. I believe that there was some friction there, and I'm not gonna sit here and say something that I have proof of, but it just personally I felt like maybe there was a little bit of friction between those two drivers. And then with basically you saying what you're saying now, obviously, there's some truth to this, that Austin Hill is a young driver, he's got a good ride, and he's not racing people the way that they expect to be racing. Now, Larry Mack, if he was involved in this conversation, he would have a conniption fit over how a racer is supposed to be raced. But we'll have to go back to the time of Ernie Irvin, right? What did the drivers do to Ernie Irvin in 1991? What did they do?
I don't quite remember, sir.
They
teamed
up on him at a driver's meeting at Daytona and told Swervin' Irvin that he needed to calm down because if he wanted to be in this sport, then he needed to learn how to race his fellow competitors with respect that they were giving to him. So basically, the drivers created a union against Ernie Irvin, sat him down in a driver's meeting and said, look, man, you're either going to have to figure this out or you're not going to be around here. And that says a lot to Morgan McClure, who at that time was the car owner for Ernie Irvin. So this is an even bigger story than I believe what we've all harped on for the last week. Johnny Sauter being able to get into the playoffs is unfair because he's had a waiver, but yet if he broke his leg, we would not even be questioning the fact of a waiver. This was a suspension that was given down by NASCAR. Obviously, NASCAR felt that this was the right decision, and it's left up to us to evaluate it, second guess it, and to approve or disapprove of their decision. Mr. CJ Sports, please come in. We've got to change this subject because, of course, we don't want to bore our listeners. But Mr. CJ Sports, please bring your final opinion in on this conversation. Did we put him?
Well, maybe he don't have one.
No, I was muted. I was trying to do 20,000 things at once. I was muted because the echo was me. This whole situation, NASCAR, I don't know. The consistency data, I don't know. you caught me when I was trying to, we had had AC in my store for 3 days. I had an audit today. I'm trying to play catch up with scheduling and listen to you guys at the same time. And so you caught me in a moment where I was trying to write the schedule out because everybody's waiting to know what time they got to be.
The honest thing I've heard on the radio since we started this, because we're all trying to play the part and we're all trying to play devil's advocate here. But the fact of it is there is legitimate proof now that Austin Hill has not been racing his fellow competitors with respect. In retrospect, does that not make the situation a lot easier to handle to know the fact that we didn't take a championship run away from a guy for basically standing up and saying, hey, I'm tired of getting run over by a damn rookie?
I agree with you. I think it's about time that people stand up. I don't think using your truck as a damn battery ram is a good idea. And not only did he just put him in, not did he just not put him into the wall, he smacked him a few other times. He should have waited till he got out of the truck and then smacked the snot right out of the little punk, but that's a story for another day.
So we would have preferred, and I think this should be a poll that you put on Race Chat Live, is would you have preferred him to wreck Johnny Austin? Would you have preferred Johnny Sauter to wreck Austin Hill under green or a fist fight at the end of the race? I would vote for the fist fight.
Oh, I'm all for the fist fight because here's why. Because then we could get Jim Ross to call the action on a video. No, seriously, here's why. Johnny Sauter wrecked a good truck. He cost his team owner money. That was dumb. That was disrespectful to anybody who wrecked somebody intentionally. I firmly believe, and I don't care if it's on dirt. Well, most guys that run dirt own their own car, so that'd be up to the sanctioning body. But if you wreck someone intentionally, your car owner should take that out of your paycheck. How many times do you really think that they're going to wreck a race car?
Well, and look, and this goes back to Kevin Harvick and something I did not know about Kevin Harvick. And we all know the Rooster incident, right? The Ricky Rudd incident where Kevin Harvick at Richmond, I believe it was, or maybe it was Bristol, jumps over the car, jumps on top of the car and gets into a fight with probably the meanest, baddest son of a gun that ever raced the circuit up at that time, which was Ricky Rudd. Once the fines were levied by NASCAR, Richard Childress called Kevin Harvick into the office and said, look, you costed my team $120,000. I'm deducting this from your check. This is your fault. This is your problem. You created this. My crew members were penalized because of your actions, so I feel that it's in the best direction of this team for you to pay the $120,000 fine that was levied against the team. So there, what you're saying, and I'll give one more example. In dirt track racing, I don't know how it is in asphalt, but in dirt track racing, the one thing you don't do is show up in another man's pit. So you can't show up in another man's pit in short track racing, but you can't wreck somebody under caution either. I'm kind of wondering how these guys are supposed to defend themselves when they have some idiot out there trying to put them in the wall every lap.
Do what they did on Days of Thunder, wreck that shit on the highway. No, I'm just kidding. They got to do
a couple of rental cars. But I think we all agree. We'd have rather seen a fist fight there at the end. Austin Hill
hit the pace car.
We can compare Austin Hill to the size of Ryan Newman. Those that don't know Austin Hill, he's a pretty big boy. He's about the size of Ryan Newman. Of course, Johnny Sauter's always been known as a little scrapper, too.
Yeah, they got to do something. I mean, we got to do something here. You can't use cars as a weapon. They're already a weapon, for crying out Christmas. Don't use them and destroy car owners' investment. It gets banged up enough.
Whoa. And I know it sounds like I'm a broken record here. What you're telling me is that we should not see action like Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin in Martinsville, where somebody forgot where the gas pedal and the brake was. Okay, that's tearing up the owner's race car. So we don't want that in racing, then you might as well just go Formula One racing or IndyCar racing. Stock car racing is made to bend sheet metal, buddy. That is stock car racing. And anybody that doesn't believe it, well, they're a fool.
No. I'm not going to do whoa, 18 times like you did. But I will say this. A little beating and banging is great. Forgetting where the hell gas pedal was, I wish I had gas pedal was on. Steering wheel accidentally. Numerous quotes because you have to unloosen it. So that's one thing. Banging against somebody and wrecking them unintentionally by getting them loose is totally acceptable. Beating and banging a little bit to go across the start finish line, i.e. Ricky Craven or Bush, that's acceptable. Demolishing a race car because you're pissed off because your 75-year-old ass just got wrecked does not constitute you destroying a race car.
I beg to differ.
You can beg to differ all you want. Come on up here to New York and beg. You know what? If you leave now, if you start walking now, you'll get here by Tuesday.
I'll have to hitchhike. I'm not good on walking. I'll put a little leg out there.
We can put a little leg out there.
I don't know if you know about Jason, how big he is, but I'm stopping in North Carolina. I'm picking him up. He's gonna have my back in this one.
Yeah, he can carry you in the strong woman competition. Yeah, y'all can compete in a strong woman competition up here in Fonda.
But to be honest with you, Craig, I mean, we wasted 35 minutes here talking about a subject that I think that all of us are excited about, and that's what we need. And when you start cutting and drawing personalities when they're already cut and dry, and you have the face of NASCAR being guys like Chase Elliott and the Alex Bowman bandwagon and Matt Diamandetto, at least Matt has a personality. Alex Bowman and Chase Elliott, neither one of those guys have any personality. So, you know, whether it's a thumb up the butt by Matt Diamandetto or Johnny Sauter giving the God Bless America or no comment, I'm here so I don't get fined. I have to say that anytime we're able to build excitement, it's good for the sport. And I guarantee you, anybody that bought a ticket at Iowa this past weekend was very satisfied with the amount of excitement that this incident created.
Oh, absolutely. And you said it best. What would we be talking about? Nothing. We'd have nothing to talk about because there was no excitement. Now, let's move on to the other dingbat that got himself Ross Chastain. We hit on it just a tad bit. And then I want to talk about good old DW. And maybe the memory that you remember the most in the icky shuffle is not in there. He gets himself disqualified. His height was too low. We discussed why, because he didn't burn it down like Seth Rollins and the WWE would, because they had to save the equipment for next week. That, in turn, apparently his car was too low. It went twice. It failed the second time, so they disqualified him. Here is my question to you, and I have not seen anything hide nor hair of it. Did Brett Moffitt have to go through the same inspection?
Yes.
Inspection process. I say yes. But now, when this foot rule first came into effect at the beginning of the season, I remember a certain person on this show, his first initial started with C, his second letter in his name was H. He said...
You're talking about CJ Sports, right?
No, I said H.
Oh, well, C-H-E... yeah, that's right. C-H-E-J, right? Okay, what is it that I said? What are you calling me out for? Let's do it.
Well, you said to us, Mr. CJ Sports and the incomparable Craig Moore, the first person to get a fine and to get a win taken away for cheating is going to be Kevin Harvick. Son, you were wrong. It wasn't even in the Cup Series.
It was in the truck series, for God's sake.
Yeah. See what not cheating has wound Kevin Harvick up doing, keeping him not being in victory lane. And I do want to reiterate that the cause for the truck to be low was possibly a left front broken shock. The car was near about 2 inches off of being legal. So we're talking about damn near 2 inches that the car was lowered by. So, you know, it wasn't something that was, you know, a hairline or anything like that. The car was 2 inches below what it should have been. But the excuse from the team was a broken front left shock that got damaged during the race. Whether or not there was competitive advantage, I'm not sure. I also had it verified that all top five drivers were teched the same way. So the second, third, fourth, and fifth place cars were teched just as the first place truck was. But with NASCAR coming in and making this penalty, I think we all got to see how unfair it is to the fans to watch somebody cross the finish line and not be the technical winner. Now, Craig, I know that if you bring a big motor to the sport that's not supposed to be, there's certain guidelines like that that would make you fail tech. But in the Cup Series, there is no ride height limit anymore. So technically, in the Cup Series, this would have not even happened. This is one of those glitches in the rules where there's no gray area. It's only black and white. And when he failed post-race tech, it automatically disqualified him. And we're talking about a guy who's now won 2 races and is not qualified for the playoffs, where we've got a guy with Johnny Sauter who has now been suspended for a race and is still eligible for the playoff system. That, to me, leaves me scratching my head. And I can only imagine how the so-so fans of NASCAR can be very confused on how all this political stuff actually works out for the sport.
All right, so now that brings up an interesting point, and I'm glad you said that because I was going to ask you that question because I'm that kind of a guy. Do you think, and maybe this is another poll for the Ray Chat Live page, even though the appeal process is already done, I want to know what our 7 fans think. NASCAR have taken that win away, but said, okay, well, you won before you were running in truck series full time, so we're going to still let you in because you won once earlier this season. I'll take that as a no.
Well, I'm sorry, I must have missed that. I mean, I didn't realize that was a question.
Do you think that NASCAR should have still allowed Ross Chastain in to qualify for the playoffs because he had already won?
No. I think that completely derailed Trevor Bayne's career when he won the Daytona 500 was the fact of that it did not qualify him for the chase. That he had claimed points in another series. So basically it shot the Wood Brothers team down from the beginning because they had not earned a playoff spot based off the win that they got at Daytona. And that, I believe, was the very first year that we ran in, that we had this your win and your end type concept. And so it did, you know, it had Trevor Bayne been able to change his points up to the Cup after that point in time, then I believe that, you know, it may have opened the door for Trevor Bayne to have run a full season his very first year of 2011 when he won the Daytona 500. So I am confused. I'm appalled at the fact that NASCAR would all of a sudden implement a new rule change, because before this happened, I didn't think that it was in any way possible for a team to change, or a driver to change, where he was going to gain his points at. I thought that was decided at the very first of the year. And, you know, if you wanted to run a lower series, then that was the risk that you took. The only way that this was even going to work for Ross Chastain is obviously because the 20th through 38th in points, I guess, their no-show drivers that are not full-time competitors in the series. Obviously, if he was only 14 points from being into the top 20 after just one win, there must be a lot of drivers that are just part-time. And so he was taking advantage of a rule, and it seems like NASCAR bent over backwards to give him that ability just to have him thrown out there for the disqualification of the truck team. And obviously the owner, Mr. Nice, was not too happy about it and said that actions like this could drive owners out of the sport, which I thought was a very strong statement. And it's not something that I think it's something that we're not used to, but we've seen over the last couple of years by Bob Levine, who's also said that there's certain actions that NASCAR takes that actually penalize a lower funded team. It doesn't give them the chance. And in this, for instance, with Ross Chastain, as you said earlier, the whole reason why he didn't pass Tech is because he failed to burn his car down, his truck down, after the win. Had he burnt that thing down and ripped the tires out of it and probably damaged $40,000 worth of equipment for a low-budget team, he would have passed inspection and went home with that $50,000 briefcase that he was supposed to have gotten. That's my take of it. The owner needed as much of those parts to be ready for next weekend as possible. And unfortunately, Ross Chastain was the guinea pig of a rule that I don't think any of us should agree with.
Now, I will tell you this, and you'll be a little shocked. I reached out to Paul Junior Designs, who was the sponsor on the truck, and actually he is a sponsor on a couple of the races this year for that team. And they pretty much have not gotten back to me yet. I wanted to know what their thoughts on it were. And so, you know, just in case anybody thinks that we don't try to reach out to people, we sure do. And I've not heard anything back on it. I didn't really think that I would.
How about the stigma that sponsor and that driver was the very first driver since 1960 that did not take home the trophy after being declared the winner at the checkered flag? I mean, that's a hell of a stigma that Ross Chastain is going to have to carry around for a very long time. We were all waiting to see who would be the first one to fall victim. I think we all expected it to be in the Cup side. I think we all expected it to be a real reason behind it. This is one of those situations to where I wonder why that rule even exists. And it will probably be something changed out of the rule book at the end of the year, just because I don't believe NASCAR wanted to throw Ross Chastain out. It's just a black and white rule book, and they had to follow what the rule book said. Or, of course, the legions of fans would criticize NASCAR for the decision they made or the decision they failed to make.
Well, I think you won't see the rule thrown out. I think that in December they will sit down, the powers to be down in Daytona, and in NASCAR land, they will sit down and they will tweak that rule. Not only will they tweak that rule, I believe that they'll look at the Johnny Sauter waiver, and they will tweak that rule as well. I could be wrong. Sometimes I am. Sometimes I'm not. More than likely, I'm not. But I think that there'll be a lot of rule. There'll be a couple more rule changes. Going back to these two incidents specifically this past weekend at Iowa. Now, I want to ask you something. We all busted, and we're, well, maybe not busted is the right word, but I don't know about you, but I really can't stand, I think we've said this before, DW is out of touch in the booth. He can be comical at times, but his last race is this weekend at Sonoma. I want to ask each one of you guys, not maybe the most shining moment of Darrell Waltrip's career, but what do you remember most the first time that you've seen DW race?
Well, first of all, let me defend DW. At the beginning of the year and in years past, especially since Gordon has been in the booth, we seem to have been aggravated at DW. But here's what happened. The moment that he announced his retirement, DW started kind of being like the old DW again, smart and witty, and didn't really, you know, he wasn't allowing Jeff Gordon to rub him the wrong way. They've actually made jokes about their comparisons of each other's career. It seems like the moment DW announced that he was not coming back, it took a relief switch. It was basically a switch of relief, and he started becoming more of the DW that I think that for 19 years we enjoyed. And it didn't seem to be that he was as aggravating as what he had been in the past until the Jeff Gordon situation showed up. And I don't think that those two were ever the right pair to work with in a booth together, especially being that DW, the older guy, the more seasoned, and there's never going to be a transitional driver that can go into the booth and do the things that DW did straight from retirement of driving a race car. Now, the most memorable moment of DW's career, I have three of them. And, of course, you said that one of them I can't say, and that's the Iffy Shuffle. I remember that race 1989 when DW finally on a 17th try won the Daytona 500, the ecstaticness. I think at that point in time, after the year before of Bobby Allison winning and the 87 Daytona 500, I think that kind of showed the significance of what this race meant to somebody who was trying for so long to win it. But I also remember the time that Rusty Wallace wrecked DW in 1987 for the first Winston race. But probably the most memorable one of all was the Charlotte race, I believe it was, with Dale Earnhardt, where DW was there at the tail end of his career, still a car owner, and DW had the fastest hot rod that night, and we all expected him to go back to victory lane after it had been such a hard ride for him. And unfortunately was collected in a wreck with Dale Earnhardt. That one probably sticks out the most. And then it's hard to leave out the time that he drove for DEI, how it kind of just made him happy again. It made him feel like he was competitive. And DW's always had a real warm smile. But after a certain point in a driver's career, Craig Moore, they become no longer the villain, no longer is the villain. They're the old guy that you want to see catch a win. I think Jimmy Johnson's falling in that category right now.
I was just getting ready to say that.
Yeah. He's out of the villain stage. He's in the sympathy stage now, okay? There's the villain. There's the rookie. There's the, oh, this kid's going to be good. Then he becomes a villain. Now this is the sympathy stage. So after the sympathy stage with that was kind of created by DW, you know, it was very, very heartbreaking to see that night come to an end when we all believed that he probably had the fastest hot rod and was going to put the 17 Western Auto machine into victory lane, what would have been probably his very last time. So, you know, I was, of course, a 1980s baby. I was born in 1980, so the memories, they only started adding up to about 7 or 8, 9 years old. I didn't really remember DW in his prime, but I do remember him after Hendrick Motorsports, and that was when he started his own team. And after that big wreck, I believe it was Pocono, where he broke his hip and had to step out of the car for quite a while. I think that was the beginning of the sympathy side for DW's career. So I have a moment of when he was still Billy Badass, a moment of when he was sympathized by the crowd, and then the moment that really just stands alone, which is the Icky Shuffle. So a man of dominance, a man who finally, you know, completed his dream. So DW's had a hell of a career, guys. It's going to be tough to see him go. I know a lot of people were excited to see DW come to an end. We all had his replacement partner there, but it looks like Fox is just going to go with Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon. How fun that's going to be.
Oh, that's going to be like watching paint dry, dude.
So what's your favorite memories? Or have I used them all up, Craig?
Yeah, you kind of did, but that's all right.
Well, you're a little older than me. You should remember more of the glory days or
Nygaard. It's not a favorite memory of mine. It's not a favorite memory of mine, but it's a memory nonetheless. It's kind of a sad memory. 2001, Mikey wins the Daytona 500.
Mikey!
Yes. That showed, and I'm not even, we're not even going to talk about Senior's death just yet, but that's CW human. To me, it showed that he wasn't a machine. He wasn't,
I think we all remember. I can't believe he won the Daytona 500, and then moments later, I hope Dale's all
right.
I hope Dale's all right.
Exactly.
How that emotion, you know, of your brother winning and your best friend sitting down in turn three and there's no movement and wondering what's going on here. That moment of happiness was quickly spoiled. There was only one other person that I think had that moment of victory taken away, and that was Mikey Waltrip himself. You know, there was only one other person that can really relate to how Mikey felt. Of course, Mikey, you know, from his interview on Dale Jr.'s podcast, him and Dale Earnhardt were very close. And even during a time where DW was not very close, you kind of have to wonder, maybe that's why Dale was really friendly and very and close to Michael Waltrip, right? Because his arch enemy, we all believed, was DW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But for years growing up, we all thought that Dale and Jeff hated each other. And they really didn't. They were business partners.
They were business partners, right.
But the on-screen, if you will, play was that they couldn't stand one another. Whereas Senior had a lot of respect for Jeff. And he even busted on him when Jeff even played it up when he won his championship. He got a glass of milk and drank it. So, but getting back to Daryl, that to me showed that he was human. Now, I remember the twilight of his career where he was running the Kmart car and he was running his own team, and it was pretty much a disaster in and of itself. And I thought to myself, is this how the old man's going to go out? Is this how the old man's going to go out? This is sad. This is very sad from a fan standpoint. I wasn't a big DW fan growing up. I was a Dale fan. My dad was a Dale fan. Later on in life, my dad became another Dale fan, a Dale Jarrett fan. I'm really not quite sure why, and I can't ask him because he's no longer with us, as you know. But I remember sitting there watching the races, and Dad would root for Daryl Waltrip or Dale Earnhardt. And I'd be like, yeah, but that Waltrip guy, he's pretty good. Ah, son, he's no good. And in reality, he likes playing the bad guy role. He said it in an interview earlier this week. He relished wearing the black hat. He enjoyed it. And, you know, obviously the Icky Shuffle, I said you couldn't pick it and I won't pick it. But I think that was pretty neat. I thought that was... It was goofy, but it was exactly, I think, what the sport needed.
Well, Daryl had figured out at a very young age that if he could get under your skin, then he was halfway to beating you. Because when he would get around competitors that he had gotten under their skin, what did they do, Craig Moore? They raced him harder. And what happens when you race your car harder than what you're supposed to? You wind up burning the tires up. You wind up doing this. So he was already in their head at a very young age. He figured out how to get in people's heads. And there's a reason why they called him Jaws. He had no problem running his mouth. He had no problem calling drivers out. And, you know, he was a media slut. I mean, there's no other way around it. He was a media darling. Anytime you put a microphone in front of his face, he was going to say something that was not going to be said by other drivers. And, of course, he had a very long career after his racing career because of that. So... Mr. CJ Sports, are you there? Do you have any comments on the sayonara to DW?
You guys kind of touched when you asked the question. You know, there's, of course, I think everybody, Vicky Shuffle was what sticks out most to everybody. In my other memory or thought is the 17 Western Auto, and being a owner driver, that was something that I feel he was kind of, you know, a little bit ahead of the time, and you know, we've gotten to see other drivers do this and Stewart and so forth. You know, we all know my thoughts and opinions. I'm glad that this has all come to an end, at least in the booth side of it. You know, he had his value and helped this sport early on, but I felt that we got to a time that it was time to kind of move in another direction with all the changes in NASCAR. You know, I've been very, you know, vocal about that. I feel that we need to have drivers or people in the studio that are a little more current on what's going on versus trying to guess from your past experience. But, you know, he's obviously a big part of the sport and, you know, and helped keep the sport going in the ups and downs that we've experienced. And obviously, you know, especially on the driving side and of the sport, he's going to be missed. You know, now I say that like he's gone, but you know, he's not going to be such a factor every week of our how we listen to the sport and what we you know, the opinions we get. So, but those are the two things that stuck out to me. And then, of course, that's where you went. And then, you know, like I said, I think everybody kind of has the same. As long as his career was and, you know, riding for Junior Johnson and everything else, those, you know, those are the things I think that stick out quick, fast, and hurry for everybody.
All right, I got a question for the both of you. Let's see who knows the answer. How did Boogity 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 come about?
I don't know.
D-W,
you know, CJ? Right.
I always thought
know.
It was on a. It was from a novel called Goosebumps. Wasn't that what they called the isn't that what the ghost said? Boogity boogity boo. So I thought.
He took it from there, but the reason that he came off with it, and it wasn't planned that he had opened that race with that. He said in an interview today that he got tired of hearing green, 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 green. He got tired of hearing it. He got tired of saying it.
Right.
So right before the green flag dropped, as they were in turn three, he looks at the guys in the booth and says, "I'll take this." Well, if you think about it, that's a pretty ballsy move.
Oh yeah, but hey, he was a pathfinder. He was a groundbreaker for sure.
So he says that. Now he says he shows up at the track next the following week, and there's signs in the stands that say "Boogity Boogity Boogity." He says, and I've adapted it over the years to different things, to let's go racing, let's go short track racing, let's go road course racing. But he says that is how it started. And I just find it, I thought it was neat when it first started. Now it's, I can liken it to a drunk person coming up to me at a gig seven times in a night. Going, "Can you play my song?" It's annoying. And that part I'm glad is gone. You guys were supposed to laugh at that. I thought that was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'll mention Danica and I'll get you drinking Jose.
Oh, gosh. Bring the shot glass. I was looking over the Wikipedia of Darrell Waltrip, and his last race was the Southern 500 at Darlington Raceway in 1992, only his second year into being a driver owner. He actually won three races that year, but talk about a driver that hung on for eight more years and never once again found victory lane. That you know, we remember so much of the hard time there of Darryl Watch at the end of his career. And it reminds us once again that it's sad when a driver stays around longer than what they should.
Well, when you wear out your welcome, I mean, that pretty much. I mean, and he said it himself. He said it in an interview earlier today that he would be a better owner now than he would be than he was back then.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because I didn't have everybody that these guys have now. He says, even with Tony Stewart, when he was still an active driver, he still had people that took care of certain things. He
right.
goes, I did it all. He did it. He said, I negotiated with sponsors. I had driver obligations, and then I had owner obligations.
Hmm.
He says, you know, and it's, Chris, have you ever done, if any of you guys have ever done sales and radio, you'll understand what I'm getting ready to say.
Yes.
Huh?
Oh, it's hard. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's more news than it is, yes.
Right, but the sales department wants to hear the commercials because that's what signs their paycheck. The desk jockey, the radio announcer, wants to play the music because that's what he enjoys. He doesn't want to play the commercials. He doesn't enjoy them because it's of no benefit to him. Other than that helps pay his salary, but he doesn't care because most DJs would do it for free in radio, not really, but they'll tell you that. Same thing. Darryl Waltrip said he did not enjoy doing the sales thing because he was torn between, well, I got to do the owner's things, and then I got to do the driver's things, and I'm spreading myself thin. And he said, today I would be a much better owner because of knowing what I went through then versus and having people now to help me with that stuff. So
if we go back to the 1990s, it was the end of the independent drivers. And Ricky Rudd, Darryl Waltrip, and I think Darryl was one of the first ones that tried to take control of his own career because he had money that was being flaunted in front of him that said, hey, you know, we all remember Waltrip left Hendrick Motorsports to race his own team. I mean, would Gordon have even been at Hendrick Motorsports had Darryl Waltrip decided to go his own route? And after that, Ricky Rudd. And then we, of course, know Bill Elliott's stint. And Jeff Bodine, who took over Alan Kulwicki. Alan Kulwicki was kind of the groundbreaker for this driver-owner, but the playbook and how to actually do it had not been written yet. And other than Alan Kulwicki, I mean, Bill Elliott never won a race as his own team owner. He was for the first time in his career, he was in a 3-year drought of not winning, being his own car owner. DW only had success the first 2 years, never had another amount of success again. Jeff Bodine, I believe, was only able to win one or two, maybe three races once he took control of the Alan Kulwicki team. And Ricky Rudd, I know that he was able to continue his winning streak for a couple of years, but they were definitely not championship contending years when he was a driver owner.
Do you know how old DW is?
No. I got his Wikipedia right here, though.
I'm on Wikipedia there, dummy, so sit down. Sit down.
He's born in 1947.
Yeah, he's 72 years old. Dude, if I live to be 72, I hope I look that good.
Yeah, no doubt.
I hope I look that good.
Bread and chicken.
Yeah. And probably
Kentucky.
Grits.
Yeah. I don't know. He's from Kentucky. I don't know if they got grits up there or not.
So they've changed the road course out in Sonoma. It is now 12 turns.
Yes, and we're bringing the carousel back. Most of these guys have never raced the carousel. If you want to talk about some dominant wins back in the old day, Ricky Rudd, Jeff Gordon, those guys have raced on the carousel, but I don't know if there's a single generational driver right now that's ever raced in the carousel. If somebody could get that stat up, I don't know how to even search that, but I don't believe any of these drivers have ever raced on the carousel.
I don't know. Maybe CJ can get it up. I'm out. I'm outside.
So, real quick, Darrell Walsh's very first race was in 1972, the Winston 500 at Talladega. His final race was the Napa 500 at Atlanta in the year 2000. So that's 28-year career that he put into NASCAR, collecting 84 wins in the Cup Series, 13 wins in the what we know as the Xfinity Series now, and 8 top tens in the Truck Series. So definitely a career to remember. 97 total wins in NASCAR. He'll always be remembered as one of the greatest, and I think that they should have in his Hall of Fame, they should have it as a driver and a broadcaster as well. So, we're going to miss him. I know you will. But back to the carousel. Of course, we're going to Sonoma this weekend. Road course. It's our first road course race of the season. Fans over the years have become very excited over these road course races. What can we expect here this weekend, and is the road course racing going to live up to its hype?
I think it will. I think it'll live to its hype. You know what I am so glad we have not had in probably – can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay, I had my phone on mute, so I wasn't sure. I had to get a new phone tonight because I'm not sure if you saw it, but my battery was like a weeble wobble, and it almost – it wouldn't fall down. It was getting ready to explode, so I had to go buy a new phone tonight. Want to thank Cricket Wireless for that. I think that the one thing I'm grateful for is we no longer have road course ringers. Every driver in that field is pretty adept to running at a road course. So we don't have the set heads coming in to visit a racetrack once a year. In their stupid wigs, and Borisette isn't taking up a ride of somebody who probably should be learning. And I think that's a lot of thanks to the iRacing League and simulators.
E-racing. Right.
And what?
E-racing altogether. Like the e-sports rise in popularity, I think that it has had a major influence on these guys getting some familiarity with certain road courses. Before digital games like they are now, you couldn't really, you might could race the track, but you know, nowadays, I mean, from every corner and all, it's a lot you can learn behind TV and a good game.
Absolutely.
I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, I believe it.
Nope. When I used to bowl every week, I would watch the PBA on Sunday afternoons, and I would bowl on Sunday nights. I would intently watch what they were doing, and I would try it that night. Same thing. You study the game that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
With the advent of video games and the technology the way that it is, if you go on to NASCAR.com, they have an iRacing video up of the new Sonoma track. And it's at first I thought it was an actual practice. I was the graphics on it were that good.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you my prediction now, and I think you're going to be shocked, Mr. Chris. I think you're going to be shocked, but I'm going to give you the winner. And he's going to break a winless streak, and he's going to finally solidify his place in the first round of the playoffs. And that's the person we talked about earlier, and it's not Jimmy Johnson, it's Kevin Harvick. I just have a feeling. And now that he doesn't have to worry about being the first one having a win taken away, they might be able to cheat a little bit.
Well, I think that's still in the back of their minds at Stewart Haas. You definitely don't want to be the first guy caught cheating. But Kevin Harvick to victory lane. I think that that would make a record of us picking a driver other than Stuart Friesen, of course, for the win, and not being able to capitalize on that. I think that's a good pick. I really thought that you were going to go with a Ryan Blaney. Felt like maybe.
No, I'm a firm believer in Kevin, and KH is going to get it done this week and make Delana a happy woman, finally.
Well, and there's nothing like pleasing a woman by bringing home the W, if you know what I mean. I won't elaborate. I won't elaborate. So put your W. But anyway, and I wouldn't necessarily pick Ryan Blaney either. But I feel like Penske is where it's at, and Ryan Blaney is one of those cars, the only Penske car in the stable that isn't already qualified for the chase. And we go back to the smoothness that he had at the Roval last year. I think that built a lot of confidence in Ryan Blaney, and so he should be one of those guys that we expect to be there at the end. I'm not going to change my pick. I think Ryan Blaney will be in victory lane at the Sonoma race.
Well.
I bet you didn't see that one coming.
No, I figured you'd go with Kevin Harvick. We don't even have to ask CJ because we know who he's going to pick. He's going to pick that little bitch, Kyle Busch.
I was going to shake things up. I was going to stay in the same stable, but I just felt maybe Clint Boyer would find himself in victory lane this weekend.
Another guy needing a win to maybe advance his career because, the one thing that we have not touched on is the fact that Stuart Haas Racing announced a couple weeks ago that they were in negotiation with three drivers and three sponsors, and the likelihood of all three drivers coming back in this state of environment isn't very good. And I think that if somebody would go ahead and pull off that win at Stuart Haas Racing, Clint Boyer could probably solidify his existence next year and beyond at ASHR. This is one of those tracks where it would be very good to see him capitalize on that. So I like that pick as well. I like all the picks we made tonight. You know why, right? Because we all picked the blue oval in the end. That's what I'm talking about. That's why it's Race Chat Live with Chris and Craig.
No, it's Craig and Chris. Well, in all seriousness, I honestly have had a ton of fun tonight. I have fun every week, but since I got to lead the first 30 seconds because CJ decided to cut me off and had to do 4 minutes of introductions, that's all right, though. We love CJ, and we can't fire him. He's the boss. But what a night it's been. And this is why we love doing this each and every week. Even though the big girls were off last week, the truck series gave us definitely something to talk about. And, I heard this earlier in the week, and I don't remember what show it was on, but if the truck series was not like it was Sunday, what would we have talked about tonight?
I don't think we've gone all the way to, an hour and a half into the show. That's what I love about racing. You know what we didn't talk about at all?
Xfinity.
Right. Why?
Because it wasn't a whole lot of exciting stuff happening.
I kind of agree with that. It was a great race. There's nothing to complain about. But there again, other than Christopher Bell picking up a win, just really wasn't that exciting. And wasn't there like a last lap pass or something?
I believe there was, but I don't remember off the top of my head. It wasn't something that stuck out to me.
Right.
Like you said, that race was like watching paint dry. Now I'm looking out my window and I digress. I started laughing and I wasn't laughing at what you said, Chris.
We've had four kittens that the mother was dropped off, I don't know, 2 months ago or whatever, and she gave birth to four kittens, and they're outside playing right now.
Aww.
And it's 9:30 at night.
We love kittens on Race Chat Live. There's nothing wrong with grown men liking kittens.
Oh, my God, no. And they come up every morning. I come out on the porch to smoke a cigarette. I look out the door, and they look up at me like, dude, are you going to put food out here or what?
Right. Don't you love that?
We're hungry. But if you open the door, they take off. And then as soon as they hear the door shut, they come
back
up.
Yep.
It's like, huh, yep. But no, they're adorable. So I don't mean to get off topic, but not or start laughing when you said something. I wasn't laughing at what you said. I'm watching them fight and it's or play, and it's kind of amusing. So, but no, the Xfinity race was not exciting. It was like watching paint dry, and the Truck Series was exactly what we didn't expect it to be, which was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I will tell you this. Austin Hill, getting back to that situation, he is on
probation.
You better
watch his ass.
Exactly, and he is on probation until December 31st, which I don't really understand December 31st, for Christ's sake. Their season ends in the middle of November, and their banquet's a week later. So if he does something wrong, before December 31st, whether it can't be on the track, but let's say he gets a DWI, he
Ooh.
Could get in trouble with NASCAR for that because he's on probation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I never understood that until I started thinking about it. Now, I want to raise up a real quick chat with you about something. And this was brought up the other day, and I don't remember where. It could have been on Drama Book. I'm not 100% sure. By the way, you can find Race Chat Live on Facebook. Just search Race Chat Live. Give us a like and give the 110 Nation a like. And on everything that we post. But if a driver is suspended indefinitely, now indefinitely apparently in NASCAR is a very short time, usually it's about a month by the time they go through a rehab and NASCAR clears them. They are technically not eligible. If they come back and win a race, they're not eligible for the playoffs. I wonder, and I want to get your thoughts before we end the night, is do you think that is fair? Seeing the light of the Johnny Sauter incident, he obviously broke a rule. They gave him a waiver because in the rule book it states you must attempt to qualify for every race. You think it's fair that somebody who completes the road to recovery and is reinstated in NASCAR, if they win a race, they're not eligible to race in the playoffs?
Oh, wow. So we're talking about the Spencer Gallagher incident from last year at Talladega, who won a race and was suspended by NASCAR for violating the substance abuse policy and was not granted a waiver based off of his suspension. Then what that obviously said, good job, Big J Journalism showing up again. Craig Moore, he's 2, I'm 0. That means he's got more balls than I have. He remembered the fact that Spencer Gallagher did not get a waiver after winning at Talladega. That seems to be an interesting question, and we have found a falter into how NASCAR judges the situation. So does that mean that they felt like they were pressured to grant a waiver to Johnny Sauter? Maybe they didn't even want to give him a suspension, but felt like the fans were asking for that to happen. That leaves an interesting point. No, I do not agree with it. I do not agree in the waiver. I do not agree with the suspension. I think that was
too far. NASCAR could have handled it in another way. So my answer is no and no, and a great job of pulling out the fact that Spencer was the NASCAR when that team should have been eligible.
Well, sometimes I even surprise myself. Let's just say that.
Very good, very good. And Mr. CJ Sports, before we go, you know, here's Big J Journalism showed up. Spencer Gallagher, ineligible. He missed like 5 or 6 races after his drug testing. Is the drug testing a worse offense than what Johnny Sauter did? Because obviously there was a difference in the judgment call by the rule book giving Johnny Sauter a waiver and not giving Spencer Gallagher a waiver.
So anybody that's ever listened to me talk about drug and not passing a drug test knows that I have zero tolerance. I no waiver. I'm a believer because you're taking, and I understand sometimes taking different supplements or things gives you a false positive. I'm sorry, you make all this money, you do your research. You know, LeBron James, $1 million a year to make sure that he takes everything and keeps his body healthy. I know that these drivers don't make as much and it's a different comparison, but AJ Allmendinger never would have been allowed in a car again, never would have hurt my feelings because he didn't pass. I have zero tolerance because 200 miles an hour fans, it was just brought up this last week, about Kyle Larson's wreck when he was in, I think it was a 32, the white car in the Xfinity Series race when he ended up in the catch beds. Those kind of things happen, and I have zero tolerance with it. So him not being able to have a waiver, I completely 100% agree because I am a firm believer that there is no road to recovery. There is no second chances when it comes to not passing a drug test in this sport. Other sports, I can give a little forgiveness because it's mainly your body that you're putting in danger. NASCAR and any form of racing, I'm sorry, that's completely different in my book. So I'm all in on not having a waiver.
Well, it ticks so many people how drugs affect system. Smoked a joint or hit a joint at the end of the Talladega race after he had already raced. By the time he got back in the car, the next zero. There are people that work in those shops that amphetamines, and they don't have to worry about your system in 2 to 3 days. So there are people that show up at the racetrack every weekend after spending all week high, and they're no longer high, so they can pass a P-test. To me, the penalty was harsh against Spencer Gallagher, especially, and as long as marijuana is categorized as a drug, guys, there is no, I have to stand with Mr. CJ Sports. Should be a zero tolerance as long as it's still classified as what it is. But do I believe that a guy who's raced a race car, smoked a joint at the end of the race, and had a whole nother week before he was going to get into a car again, that joint would have zero effect or put nobody in danger? He would have put nobody in danger for that offense. Now, when you're leading into things like Aaron Fike, you know, who was caught shooting heroin in his truck a few years ago. I don't know if you guys remember him. He was indefinitely suspended from NASCAR. I believe Ryan Sieg's brother was also indefinitely suspended from NASCAR for violating the drug policy. Unfortunately, Sieg's brother was eventually killed or died in some kind of unrelated incident. You know, I have to stand with what you're saying. It was a great point, Mr. CJ Sports. As long as that is still deemed a policy, then we should always make sure that it is a drug-free place and that drivers are always protected at the fullest. Unlike Kawhi Leonard, who can win an NBA championship jumping a helicopter, rolling a blunt with his buddy next to him. Of course, that's perfectly fine.
just like it's perfectly fine for football players to go out and smoke because their bodies are being tortured. But for some reason, marijuana and NASCAR driving has a stigma. Of course, they give out DUIs for marijuana, so it's kind of hard to argue that. And I won't be the one to say it's okay, because that would be very hypocritical of how I feel about things and the statute of a DWI or DUI.
Hey, listen. I just want to say something. New York, talking about this marijuana thing. New York State has tabled legalizing marijuana, but one of the bills that they are looking into before they leave, because they're not allowed to leave Albany and go on their 3 or 4 month vacations until they discuss one of the issues, and that is legalizing prostitution in New York State.
What?
Yeah.
That sounds about as crazy as charging $60 gate entrance to the $100,000 to win up there at the Orange County Fairgrounds Speedway. But please, what?
Yeah, I hear CJ laughing in the background. It's a good thing he's got himself a girlfriend now. Otherwise, he'd be coming to New York State.
Legalization of prostitution.
Wow.
Which part is wow, CJ? My comment about you finally having a girlfriend and not coming to New York State, or New York State thinking about legalizing prostitution?
How I just got thrown underneath the bus and prostitution.
they actually brought that up earlier this week, that they are considering legalizing prostitution in New York State. And,
but not marijuana.
But not marijuana, because there is too many variables that go along with legalizing marijuana.
Apparently, and you know what? I think the best thing to do for all these states and the positions they're being put in is to decriminalize. And we've seen several states pass a bill that has said that it is unethical for jobs to drug test for marijuana that's not into the OSHA or the Department of Transportation, basically. So there's several different routes that have been going on that behalf, but hey, that's for another show and another story. But prostitution legalized in New York? Jesus Christ.
But listen, hey, I just want to tell you this real quick. There is a impeach Trump rally next week in the Dominican Republic, and they're serving free drinks.
Oh, well, I guess if they have the same rally to lock up Hillary, I would be there. But I doubt anybody's going to show up down there. The Dominican Republic has some serious issues going on. First of all, somebody tried to murder Big Poppy. Now they're trying to cover it up in the story, David Ortiz. And another thing, rich white folks are going down there, staying up someone get in trouble for that, rich white folks. But they're dying in the at the resorts there in the Dominican Republic for some unknown reason. Yeah. There's been about 8 confirmed deaths of tourists down in Dominican Republic that have not come back home because of some kind of mystery illness down there. So, yeah, I would say that. Hell away from the Dominican Republic for now, at least until things calm down.
But listen, on that note, CJ, what do you got going on this week?
Tonight, be back in the studio as NHL draft offseason trades. We're going to be definitely talking about that with Izzo at 9:30. Preparing myself, of course, the sixth, I will be at in Ohio, and we'll be catching the Reds and Indians. So looking forward to that. And Wednesday, we'll continue talking about the NBA and their crazy offseason as the Lakers gave up about everything to get Anthony Davis. So, and Memphis got a lot out of getting rid of Mike Conley. So a lot of things going on in the NHL and NBA and their offseason. So make sure you guys catch us, the 110 Nation Sports Show, Tuesday, Wednesday night, 9 o'clock, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network.
And Zion Williamson was your number one pick tonight for the Pelicans. So he is gone first in the draft and is expected to make over $1 billion in his career, and he's not even played the first game in the NBA. So how about that kind of life that we're living in these days? So we want to thank you for listening to Race Chat Live. Of course, continue to listen to 110 Nation Sports with all the great news and radio shows that we have on the station every week. And be back with us next weekend for Race Chat Live. Craig Moore, you want to close the show?
Yeah, buddy. I want to thank everybody for showing up and listening in, and I hope you were entertained and learned some things. And we will talk to you next Thursday at 8 o'clock. I'm going to go party with some divas tomorrow, apparently, from 2 to 7. So I'm looking forward to that. Not really, but I am. They range in age from 21 to 91. So looking forward to that. Then Saturday we're going to go listen to – we might go to the races here at Fonda. There's a special race at Fonda. We just had a young man pass away from a long-time illness. And then Sunday is Glen Ridge Motorsports Park over here in upstate New York. So get out, support your local tracks, and because if you don't support them, they can't stay around. And with that being said, it's time to take it to the house. Good night, everybody.
Good night.